Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the broth lady or the inventor of the hashtag more vegetables than a vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size and self-love and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Valentine of thepaleomom.com. I'm the New York Times bestselling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip.
How are you?
I'm really good. I've had a really great weekend, and I only have a two-day work week coming up, so I'm
so
super jazzed.
Like, drunk already and ready to just be
I'm
the foreseeable future.
I'm drunk on life is what I'm saying. It's just, you know.
That's like the good kind of drunk.
How are you?
Or the less liver toxic type of drunk.
Mm-hmm.
clearly, I'm feeling a little bit spunky right now. I'm good. It's kind of one of those weird things. So the kids are out all week. And so it's not even the end of the weekend and I'm already disoriented. Like it's
the schedule's gone awry.
So like it's already like my husband and I stayed up watching television until like ridiculous o'clock last night. And then like, I don't know, I got up and like really over caffeinated myself this morning to compensate. I'm like, how did I deteriorate to this sleep pattern in like 2 days? I'm like, okay, this is not sustainable for an entire week off and time to not do that again.
But it was also probably as equally helpful to your health that you relaxed and
it was really nice to take a night off. So I have been working evenings a lot more than I like to lately. And I've had a lot of evening interviews, like evening events, and it's been definitely getting to me to just not be able to have that, like put the kids to bed and have this downtime. And I've noticed in my, that I'm starting to get these like afternoon lows of energy and I'll get cold. And so, I know that's, you know, it's either my adrenals or my thyroid or how they're connected and it's both. And so it's like, okay, like warning, stop, pull back. So, the good thing is that it's hard won knowledge and it's knowledge that came from making a lot of mistakes and ignoring my body signals for a long time. But I've gotten pretty good at like listening to that and noticing it before it's like not easily reversible. Wait, I don't know if I messed up the grammar in that sentence. I can notice it while there's still lots of time to just tighten things up and it can, you know, just fix itself really easily. So that's my goal for this week right now. And to cook an epic dinner apparently for all the people on Thursday. I was trying to count and I think we're going to have, I believe 12 and 8/9 people dinner.
Is it 8/9 already for the Crandall's little child?
Yeah, 8/9. So I'm super excited. I'm anticipating belly rubbing, even though I have no idea if that's going to be acceptable.
Nope. I can tell you, Janie and I'm doing the thing right now where your fingers go from one person's eye to the other eye. Like I hung out with Janie at Brent and Heather's wedding, and she is not the belly rubbing type. Although I'm sure she will like swallow it once or twice and just let it happen. But she's not going to just want to be like, hey, Sarah, let's snuggle and you can touch my belly.
So that wasn't actually what I had in mind. So probably will be cool because there comes a point where I just like, there's like the, oh, I want one. And then it's like spiral into depression. So there's a small amount where it's like, I'm so happy for you. And then like, gotta pull back. Cause then it goes, oh, I'm really old and I can't have any more. And boom. That's how that goes in my brain. It's a thing.
So for everybody else who's already had Thanksgiving or is perhaps even listening to this on Thanksgiving, I hope you had a wonderful time and got to spend quality time with your loved ones.
We should do like a 1, 2, 3, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes. Yeah, but like actually timed together.
Okay.
Really dorky. Okay, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. 1, 2, 3.
Happy Thanksgiving.
That's why we never time anything together on the podcast ever.
You can tell that was completely unplanned and syncopated. Yeah. So I am adopting a family this year for Christmas as well. So we had Friendsgiving this week, which was really super awesome. We had a paleo potluck with paleo friends that were available and not sick with strep, which is going around. And Nicole from Merit and Fork and her better other half. And then Brent and Heather, whom you know from Virginia Hunter Gatherers. My mom and my mom's other half, which is a thing that's happening. Those people who follow my mom on social media, which there are some of you who do, which cracks me up. She was highly entertained by last week's Stacey's mom has got it going on joke, by the way. We'll know that she is, was dating for a really long time, a whole bunch of, awkward dates that she loved to tell tales of, but she's finally seeing someone who came over for Friendsgiving. We had a lovely evening. We made grass-fed organic prime rib to feed like 15 people.
Yum.
It was insanely amazing. And I just had leftovers for dinner. And then of course for Thanksgiving, we're going to have the rest of my family is coming over. And then Jennifer Robbins from Predominantly Paleo and her family are coming over because I'm adopting her since they're a military family. And I was like, hey, you have to be part of my family. Like, this is a thing. You can't have Thanksgiving by yourself. And also, because she makes amazing food. And I like people that make amazing food and bring it to my home. That's a thing. Who doesn't want that, right?
Well, no. I mean, I've got the Crandalls coming over.
Right.
And I'm like, two cooks. So I started cooking Thanksgiving dinners. I cooked my first, like, stuffed turkey when I was 16. And then, like, from then on, like, every year for Thanksgiving, I took on, like, a gradually bigger proportion of the responsibilities. And then when I moved away for grad school, I started putting on these big Thanksgiving dinners for like all of, you know, my fellow students or, you know, all my friends who, you know, didn't have family close by and weren't going to go home. In Canada, it's only a 3-day weekend. So it's sort of like, it's not quite long enough to travel a long ways for, you know, turkey dinner. So I started throwing these like big, huge and like refuse to let anybody cook. Right? Like, no, come over. I'll do all the cooking. And
yeah,
now
that used to be us. And now I'm like, hey,
come over, help me cook.
Yep. Can you bring
like
something?
Completely different thing. But I've been doing these turkey dinners for, like, as we established last week, I'm officially old. I'm waving my cane right now to, you know,
I've got a cane in solidarity with you. Matt says,
excellent.
Matt loved our joke. He says we need to start cane club, like clone club. Because there's this
hashtag cane club.
Cane club. Yep. There's this person at work that also likes to be curmudgeonly with me about those the children. So I'm with you. I'm fully in cane club myself.
Excellent. So I've been doing it a long time and I don't feel stressed out by cooking Thanksgiving dinner. Like I've got it enough where I have my staples and I know what time I have to start cooking and I basically start about 5 hours before dinner and I cook straight for 5 hours and then dinner's made. But I'm like super excited to have more than one cook in the kitchen again this year, because last year the Crandalls also came and Russ took care of the turkey and then I did all the sides. I'm kind of hoping something. So we decided there's so many people we have to do two turkeys because we all want leftovers. So it's like a turkey for dinner that night and a turkey for leftovers. So we're trying to figure out if both turkeys will fit in my smoker. And if not, I think we might have to have a turkey showdown.
I don't know that I would want to have a turkey showdown with Russ.
Well, it would be like smoked turkey versus roasted turkey, I think, is what would happen. So that could be a thing. That could be a very interesting thing. It could happen. This could be the year of the great paleo turkey showdown. This is by the time this show goes live, whatever happened with these turkeys has like already happened now. So I encourage everyone to check out my Instagram feed because that's where I'll be sharing any, you know,
turkey showdown
2015.
Iron Paleo Chef.
That would be epic.
Ingredient turkey.
Right. There we go. I feel like I have to get like a really patriotic apron now.
I really love Thanksgiving. And it's interesting to me that you do it because you're Canadian. But it's also like I don't think of this holiday as I guess a lot of people might think of the holiday. Like, I don't know. We don't eat corn. We don't like talk about the pilgrims. You know, we just take this opportunity.
Is corn a traditional thing for an American Thanksgiving?
Yes. Yeah, so American Thanksgiving is where the pilgrims and the Indians like came
the Indians
together.
Basically saved the pilgrims from starvation.
Yeah. I don't know that the Americans saw it that way for a while, but I think we're all kind of in agreement and there right now, except the 12 listeners that I've just offended. But yes.
12 out of 18.
So, corn is one of those foods that the Indians had cultivated and knew in America, but that like people off the boat were not familiar with.
So it was like a first Thanksgiving food.
Yes. And cranberries, I believe, are another one of those that were like new to us.
New here. Won't have scurvy anymore.
America food. So, yeah, that's why, like, my mom's family...
Apparently dandelion greens were, too.
I have no idea about that. I just know that corn was a biggie, because that's the one they teach us in school.
So is corn, then, like, a traditional side dish for an American Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, like, my family always did cornbread.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So, and I don't know, like, if people do... I think there's, like, a corn pudding dish that a lot of people do that's... Have you ever had that? Like, it's kind of like a savory souffle.
No, but it sounds awesome.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. That wasn't terrible. But, so those kinds of dishes make it onto the table. It's not like you're actually eating, like, a corn on a cob.
Okay, so that's... Yeah. I was trying to wrap my head around, like, what part of corn is traditional? Because as far as I know, I mean, maybe, you know, Canadians got regional cultural differences too. So it might just be like where I grew up, it wasn't a thing, but we never had corn as part of Canadian Thanksgiving. You'd have a lot of like root vegetables, you know, stuffed turkey, cranberry sauce, pumpkin pie, you know, mashed potatoes, gravy. Like I think those are sort of,
those are all traditional foods, but I'm just saying from the perspective of like in school, in American school system, when they teach you about this holiday, they teach it as like pilgrims and Native Americans, coming together.
Totally noticed that. I'm seriously, there's been a lot of little crafty things come back.
That's okay. Well, you were asking me to educate you about American culture.
No, so if I ever want to do a citizenship exam, I got to know these
things. I'm definitely the best educator for your citizen exam. I would completely trust me.
My oldest daughter is in third grade and she's learned about all of the patriots. And that's, I've been trying to help her with her homework. And like every time she asks me a question, I'm like, let me go to Wikipedia and read up about Susan B. Anthony. And right. And then, okay, now I can actually help you understand, you know.
But third grade history is what you have to know for your citizen exam. So it's good for you guys to learn it together.
Perfect. So it's just there.
So you should just schedule the exam now that it's fresh.
Right. Yeah. In my ample spare time. No, before we can do the exam, we have to do the interview.
Mm.
And yeah, so I think it goes interview, exam, ceremony, I think are the three steps. It can take like a year, which is why I've been like, yeah, but sometime soon. I like have been officially been allowed to apply for citizenship for like 3 months now. So it's not like I've been like waiting for 6 years and been able to do it and not done it. It's just been three really, really busy months. So maybe now that Healing Kitchen is about to come out, hey, guess what I got to hold in my hands for the first time this week?
I tangentially saw that it was happening. I did not get a chance to actually watch the video. I'm assuming that your third baby is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. She's beautiful. I think she becomes a she because she's so beautiful. The good books are girls. I'm just saying the other ones.
Yeah. Well, there is a heavy female presence because there were two female authors. So true. I could see how this would be leaning towards a niece rather than a nephew.
Haven't had a chance. We basically we're like, are you ready now? Okay. Yeah, I'm ready. And we got on the phone and we both filmed what we were doing on our own ends. And we opened the books together over the phone because, you know, it was a collaboration and it didn't really feel right that somebody should get to see it first.
Right.
This is the other person. And so one of the things I still have to do is like take those videos and kind of edit them together and put it up on YouTube for everybody to witness that moment. Cause I think it was, we have a really, so Elaine and I have a similar different sort of rapport that you and I have where there's a large density of jokes and little jibes and zingers. And so even within that, like we're opening up this book, there's a lot of like little bits of teasing. And I think it would be really funny for people to watch. I mean, maybe it'd just be like really weird and make people feel uncomfortable, but yeah. So at some point I will actually like, hopefully some, that was on my to-do list for today, but the day happened and it didn't get done. But I'm going to play with iMovie and put those things together so that people can see them. But yeah, it's beautiful. Like I really, you know,
like from what I've seen of it, and I haven't, you know, obviously I haven't seen it, but I previewed it. I really like the kind of ethereal cleanness of the book, which felt like was very different from what you've previously done.
And it was something that came out of our conversations about what the autoimmune community needs. And it really came out of, you know, some experience with ebooks and other, you know, other books out there, and just knowing that the whole point of this book is to make the autoimmune protocol super approachable and to expand its usefulness to other chronic illnesses. So really just like here, if you've got a problem with your immune system, here's what you do. And to make it approachable from both the food's super easy, there's no weird ingredients, everything you could get at a Walmart superstore. Nothing takes a huge amount of time or skill in the kitchen, right? But everything tastes really good. And so that was like one huge part of the book. But then the other huge part of the book was like, let's go all the way back to the beginning and explain the autoimmune protocol in a way that's super approachable. And like the science book's out there for the people who want the science, right? That's where I started. Now here's the book that, you know, it's me. So clearly there's some science content because I can't turn off the dorkiness. But at the same time, you know, the introductory material is very, it's written from a more like, you know, appealing to the reader's common sense, right? Gut instincts and making, you know, making these diet changes, not feel intimidating. So one of the things that we wanted to do was make the design really approachable and make a lot of the information very graphic. So there's a lot of infographics in the introductory material. So wherever we could, we sort of, it's interesting because in certain places we stripped the graphics away to just make it just like this simple, just, you know, simple text, like it doesn't need anything else right here. And then where we could communicate the information visually, okay, let's create a beautiful graphic here to communicate this information. And then we just really embraced space. And it's beautiful. And it was, I really felt like we had this wish list for Victory Belt's design team to put together. And it was almost like they could read our minds. And it was the most amazing thing. When I first, there's this infographic of a kitchen and there's like a pantry, you know, a cupboard in the kitchen that's full of food. And then there's a fridge and a freezer. And then there's food in all these places. And then there's like little, like, here's some examples of what would be in your freezer, what would be in your fridge, what would be in your pantry, you know, foods, common foods that you would have around. And I had sort of, you know, I'd given them all of the text, right? Here's all the text. Here's how it's organized. Here's, you know, a 3-sentence description of my vision for this page. And like, here's a stock photography cartoon of a kitchen that I like the style of. And then they made what was in my head with, I felt like, a very rudimentary description, like really bordering on asinine in its lack of detail. And they just like right out of the gate made this amazing 2-page infographic that, I mean, I'm like, okay, I need to clearly be challenging this team more because they have such fantastic skill. So, you know, Elena and I keep, you know, basically, like, we feel this is certainly among the most beautiful of Victor Belt's books. If, I mean, well, there's a little bit, we think it's the best, but, you know, clearly we're a little bit biased, just a smidgen. But it's, you know, we're just so pleased with how the visual aspects of it came together to reinforce the content that we put so much thought into. So it was really, really awesome to hold it in our hands. And I'm looking forward to having a lot more so I can start handing it out to people.
Awesome. Looking forward to receiving it.
Yeah, I have no idea when that will happen, but theoretically, relatively soon.
Well, honestly, it's probably better that it's not during Thanksgiving, just because
Thanksgiving will slow all that down.
I'm just going to be really frank. This is the time where I take advantage of that 20% and I eat gluten-free things, or I eat more nuts than I normally would, or whatever the case may be, knowing that I'm also going to just be lower stress and relax, and that my body can recover, and that, like, these are the choices that I'm making and it's okay. And then I move on. So it'll be good for me to have an AIP book after Thanksgiving. And I'm sure that I'm not the only one who has this plan.
Probably not. It's one of the reasons why we were so excited that the book could come out in mid-December. So it's in everybody's hands for January 1st. Because we figure January 1st is a really common time for people to decide to, you know, try the autoimmune protocol. So, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about challenges and making changes and that whole roller coaster of, you know, like, for you and for me, it's a conscious decision of, this is how I'm going to let things slide. And it's controlled, and it's not going to keep going down this slippery slope. It's going to be this and this and this, but it's not going to be the next 7 things. And then we go, okay, it's over, time to tighten everything up. And I kind of alluded to that a little bit at the beginning of the show, just based on sort of my sleep habits also right now need a little tightening up. But I think that we've had so much positive feedback from our shows that are centered for sort of new people coming into paleo. And I think that with the holiday and the, like, really, I see Thanksgiving, I mean, I guess it's Halloween, but I see Thanksgiving as really being the beginning of the holiday season, right? We go straight from Thanksgiving into holiday parties, and all of a sudden it's Christmas, and then all of a sudden it's New Year's, and then you're going, oh no, now what? You know, like, it's that 5 weeks of complete, you know, just going from one thing to the next and not necessarily putting a lot of thought into what we're choosing to eat. And I think that it would be good to have a discussion with sort of people who are new to Paleo Mind, you know, somebody who, you know, we've been doing this a long time. So we know what our body tolerates, and we know how to satisfy a craving within that, you know, within that knowledge of what's going to be okay for us and what's kind of pushing it a little bit and what's an absolute non-starter. We're not going to go there. If you're new to paleo, you know, one of the things that can happen over the holiday season is, right, you go off the diet, right? Like, you end up having that, whatever it is.
Fall face first into a pizza buffet, as I allude to Or perhaps in this case, dessert buffet or whatever the case may be.
Whatever it is. And then kind of have to dust yourself off and get back on the bandwagon. And for me, you know, I came at paleo from a history of obesity and binge eating disorder and being on a diet, off a diet, on a diet, off a diet. And, you know, usually off a diet was way, way more intense than on a diet was, right? And so that yo-yo, you know, lose 5 pounds, gain 10, lose 5 pounds, gain 10. And so for me, there's a lot of aspects of paleo that is behavioral rather than food priorities. So for me, there's an aspect, and it just comes from my own history of having an eating disorder, but there's an aspect of this where I have to really understand for me what does derail me too far. And for me, you know, what I have to do, you know, the goal I think for everybody is that making the best choice is also the easy choice. It's also the natural choice. And I feel like I'm finally at that place, but it wasn't something that happened overnight. And it wasn't something that necessarily correlated even with healing physically. It's something that really has come with long-term commitment to this way of eating. So I think it would be kind of neat to talk a little bit about how do you make paleo a habit? How do you make it something that's so easy that it's your default? And then maybe we could tackle, you know, some sort of basic paleo questions for people who are just starting out on their paleo journeys.
Sounds good to me. You got some science on this topic?
I always have science.
Let's do it.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
So if we're talking about making paleo a habit, then really we need to talk about habit formation. And probably one of definitely the biggest myth when it comes to habits is that it takes 21 days to make or break a habit. Habit research is actually a huge field in science, and there's a variety of different ways that habit formation is evaluated. And it's something that, you know, psychologists, psychiatrists, doctors, you know, they're really interested in habit formation because there's this history of, you know, government guidelines. And whether we agree with them or not, what we see from the general public is a selective implementation of the easy things from those guidelines and generally no implementation of the things that take more effort. So how do you educate somebody? How do you create an environment where someone can form a habit and can make something that is hard become easy? And so that's the motivation behind this field of research. And what it actually has shown is that it does not actually take 21 days, and that the length of time that it takes to form a habit, and that is defined as basically performing a task without thinking about it. So whatever that task is, you've decided that you're going to commit to repetitively performing that task in a certain situation at a certain time every day. And so it's how long does it take before that's automatic? So you're performing that task without having to put effort into it, or without having to use willpower. And so what research has actually shown is that it varies person to person, and it very likely varies from task to task. So there's probably a match, you know, certain things certain people will find easier, but that same person might find something else, a harder habit to make or break. And so the range is actually between 18 days and 254 days, which is about 8 months, with the, you know, peak, this sort of average time, and sort of most people falling in around the 2 month mark. 66 days is the average amount of time that it takes somebody to form a new habit. So what this means from a sort of psychology perspective, and especially from a paleo challenge perspective, right? So there's a lot of 21-day challenges, 30-day challenges out there. And for most people, that length of time is actually not long enough for putting effort into a change to expect that change to be automatic at the end. And it's probably one of the reasons why a lot of people will, at least early on in their paleo journeys, find themselves doing the challenge for 30 days, and then they're off paleo for 2 months. And then they get back and they do the challenge for 30 days and they're off paleo for 2 months. And it's why going into any, you know, any healthy change that you want to make, whether it's something to do with diet or maybe it's, you know, going for a walk every day or making your bedtime half an hour earlier every day, or, and, you know, whatever that habit is, and thinking of it that it's going to require commitment over a longer period of time than 21 days is sort of like step one into being successful in forming a new habit. Science also shows that it's really important for habits to be action-centered. So even if your goal is to break a bad habit, having an action that you perform is rather than just not doing something, right? So if you're, for example, if your New Year's resolution is to stop smoking, having something that you do at the times that you would normally, you know, reach for a cigarette is sort of a key to being able to successfully break that bad habit. So you're substituting a different action, and maybe it's doing the dishes. Maybe it's taking a moment to walk outside and breathe in some fresh air. Maybe it's taking 3 slow deep breaths, or, you know, going up a flight of stairs, like whatever it is that makes sense for where you're going to be at when you're in that situation. So when you're in that, okay, this is where I would normally be when I would have my cigarette. What am I going to do in this, in that time and place instead? So science has actually come up with a protocol for making a habit. So even if you're breaking a habit, you're still making one because there's still an action that you're focused on. And it's really 5 steps, 5 simple steps. So the first one is to decide on what the goal is. What is this habit that we're going to try to create that will improve our health? So, you know, habit one, I'm going to eat organ meat 3 times a week. Or habit one, I'm going to put an extra serving of vegetables on my plate every evening at dinner, right? Those types of things that are very specific, and it's always easier to break things up into small. You could have 10, you know, you could be working on 10 habits all at the same time. It's always easier to break them up into small, manageable pieces, even if you're working on a bunch of pieces simultaneously. Step two, choose what the action is. Figure out what the action is, a simple action that will progress you towards your goal and something that you can do on a daily basis or on the routine basis that this habit would be performed on. So if your goal is to have organ meat 3 times a week, then you have Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you know, I'm going to have organ meat at this meal, dinner, lunch, breakfast, whatever it is. If it's going to bed a half hour earlier, then maybe you're setting a reminder in your phone that it's time to start getting ready for bed, you know, an hour before your new bedtime. So choose that simple action. What is it going to be? And then step three is to plan when and where you will do that action. So having that time and that place and that and the association is really important. So when I'm at this time and place that I have every day of the week, that's what I'm going to do, this action that is towards my goal. So maybe that is every evening after dinner, I'm going to go for a 20-minute walk around my neighborhood. So you've got your, you know, you have dinner at home, it's in the evening, it's typically around what, 6:30 or whatever time it is, and then that's when I'm going to go for my walk. So step four is like, that's the money step. Okay. Step four is every time you encounter that time in that place, do that action. And it sounds like, you know, well, that's the whole thing, right? That's habit formation. But that's where the thought process that goes into, you know, steps one, two, and three before you get to step four is what makes step four something that you can actually do day in and day out for the 2+ months that it takes for that action to become automatic. And so it's that approach of planning the action And planning the goal, determining the action that goes with the goal, and figuring out what time and place you're going to perform that action, that all of a sudden makes it something that's actually doable day in and day out. And then step five is basically understanding that, you know, it's going to get easier with time. And so step five is keep going. Step five is just keep at it. And in something like 2 months, typically within 10 weeks, but it could be up to 8 months, most people will find that doing that action becomes automatic. So they don't need to think about it anymore. And that's when you have developed a habit. And so when I think about New Year's resolutions, for me, they're always habit-centered. I never make a goal-centered resolution. So I'm never like, I'm going to lose 10 pounds this year. It's always, I'm going to eat more salads. I'm going to go to bed earlier. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to commit to going for a walk, you know, more times in the week. They're always habits that altogether are going to make me healthier, so my body will normalize its weight, rather than fixating on this specific goal. And some habits, health habits are easy to do that with, right? Focus health goals, right? It's easy to focus on the habits. Other New Year's resolutions, of course, that's not, you know, one of your New Year's resolutions is to, you know, travel to Europe this year, that's a little bit different to break into a habit. But when it comes to health-centered goals, whether it's a New Year's resolution or it's a time that you're going to start a challenge, or you're determined to go through the holidays and stay on track, you know, whatever time of year that is, it's your birthday and you're thinking about what you want to do before your next birthday. You know, starting to take those health goals and think about them in terms of habits rather than reaching some destination. And one of the reasons why that's so good is because the habits are conducive to health and they're not something you want to stop once you reach your goal. So you want to make, you know, going for a walk several times a week a lifelong habit, because it's going to reduce your risk of chronic illness and keep your bones strong and keep your stress, you know, well managed for the rest of your life. Like, you know, going for a walk is never a bad choice. So really focusing in on creating these habits that are conducive to health rather than fixating on reaching a specific health goal is typically a much more sustainable and sort of lifelong approach to health journeys.
I would say too that where there are things in your life that even aren't health related, like you said, traveling, there are usually things that hold people back from that are habit derived, like working and not taking leave, or not, you know, spending money and not saving money. Like there are things like that are usually the drivers behind why one, you know, would have a goal of making travel happen where it previously hadn't. So I think everything in life is habit based. I mean, even for me, we talk about parenting and that kind of stuff, like, you know, sometimes we all want to just pull our hair out and scream and have temper tantrums.
Yep.
Right? Especially now you're spending a lot of time with your children while they're on leave, as we all are. But it's about habit forming of saying, like, okay, I'm going to take a deep breath and walk away, or I'm going to remember to have patience, or I'm going to ask questions rather than giving answers. You know, like, there are just things that happen that we as parents set about doing to form habits rather than kind of what is instinctual to us. And I think for me, the biggest thing that I've ever done, and I think it's consistent with what a lot of what you're doing, but it's more specifically about retraining your brain, right? And there are a lot of things online, and I think we've even talked about it on the podcast before, about different techniques and mechanisms and people that are out there that are kind of helping people reframe their mind. And for me, there are certain things that I cannot eat, but instead of telling myself, like, I cannot eat that, because technically I could put gluten in my mouth. Like, I could go buy a cinnamon bun and I could put the gluten in my mouth. Like, I could do it, but I have not intentionally consumed gluten in over 5 years, because I know if I do that, I won't feel the way that I want to feel. And so I tell myself, like, I don't want that, which is a much more powerful feeling. And it's a habit that I created to empower myself and feel responsible and accountable and really good about the choices that I'm making, rather than this emotional association that a lot of us have, especially at the holidays, where you indulge and you didn't mean to, of guilt and shame or whatever it is. And just as a reminder, as we're entering these things, and if you've eaten something that you didn't intentionally set out to make a choice to do, like, there is no emotion in food. Food is an object. It does not have an association, good or bad. It is a food. And so, you know, if you did consume something that you don't want to continue to consume, or, you know, you're going to make a different decision, that's great. Move forward and, you know, setting habits, but also creating a habit of guilt and shame, as many of us do, about foods and diet, you know, yo-yo diets and all these things that society sets up about what you should or shouldn't do, they don't exist. It's really like, what do you want? What makes you feel good? What gets you to a place with health? And then set about creating those habits. And if you decide, as I intend to decide on Thanksgiving, that, you know, right now I'm trying to avoid non-AIP foods because through a stress and all that kind of stuff, I can feel myself being on the cusp of a flare. And so for me, I manage that with lifestyle and diet. And so normally I would not indulge in that because right now I'm trying to eat the foods that make me feel the best. But I've told myself, like, I'm going to make this choice and I'm going to be okay with this choice, and the world will not come to an end, and I'm going to get to enjoy a meal with my family without neuroses and all of these things that come to me personally as someone who, you know, has had a history of emotional eating and disordered eating my whole life. Like, we're already making this change in our life to be, you know, hosting a paleo-friendly Thanksgiving. I'm going to eat pie that has almond flour in the crust, and that's going to be okay. But that's because I know where the lines are for me, and that isn't going to, you know, put me into a state of health that would be problematic, right? For some people, like, I wouldn't suggest someone with nut allergies decide to eat something and then go into anaphylactic shock. Like, you have to know where your boundaries are. And when you're starting out, that's really difficult to know. And so if you make a decision and you say to yourself, as a lot of people do on the holidays, believe it or not, you know, Sarah and I cannot have gluten because it is health conditions that we have. But there are a lot of paleo people that decide on special occasions that they're going to paleo YOLO, as they call it, right? Like, you only live once. And so they decide that the gluten does not affect their health the way it affects Sarah and I's or other people's. And so
violent vomiting is not something I ever choose
exactly,
to do.
Exactly.
Exactly. And
well, like, we had Josh on the podcast, and Josh admitted that, you know, I don't want to say admitted because that sounds negative, but Josh openly talked about that was something that he had consumed, and that, you know, it's not an everyday occurrence, but that, you know, it was actually healing for him to kind of let go of this stigma because he didn't have a kind of violent reaction to it. It doesn't make him feel good. It's not a health food, but it's not, you know, something that derails his health. And therefore, people like Josh consume gluten on these days. So if that's something you do because you go to your parents' house and, you know, you set out like, I'm going to be strong and I'm only going to eat turkey and Brussels sprouts, and you come home with a belly full of pumpkin pie, like, there is no emotion that needs to be associated with that. Like, guilt and shame and all those feelings don't help with the progress of health. And so just remember that and, you know, say to yourself, okay, it happened. What, you know, what decisions do I want to make moving forward, and then create these habits? And that's
I do encourage people who, you know, aren't sure how Thanksgiving is going to go, right? So it can be a source of stress for people. I'm going home. I don't know if there's anything I'm going to be able to eat there. If you are somebody who doesn't yet know where your lines are, you know, it's, so unfortunately for a lot of people, those types of situations, whether it's Thanksgiving or it's a July 4th barbecue, is like where they discover, oh yeah, I really, really can't do X food. And it can be really miserable if you, you know, make this choice that you're going to, or if you don't, right, you just like give in and indulge and then you feel miserable. So I would encourage people to go into it with the mindset of, and if I choose to have the pie, then that's an opportunity for me to challenge wheat and conventional dairy and, you know, whatever else is in that pie. And I'm going to, you know, I will find out how my body reacts to it, because it's, if you kind of feel like there's a mental shift, right? So, okay, I've decided it's going to, you know, I'm going to do this Thanksgiving thing. I'm going to go eat this food. I'm going to find out how this food works for me, versus being in a situation, feeling like you don't have control, eating it and feeling guilty, and then feeling ill or miserable or whatever, you know, whatever the symptoms are. And then there's the all the anger and the shame and the you know, feeling defeated. So make sure make sure that your decisions are empowered. So make sure that as you are approaching these holidays, if you know you're going to feel violently ill, problem solve that beforehand. Have something else there that you can eat. Have a discussion with the host. You know, make sure that your needs are going to be met. If you don't, if you think you'll probably be okay, you know, make sure that still it's a conscious choice. So it's not, you know, it's not giving into temptation. It is the choice to enjoy this food with your friends and family. And that mindset, if things go awry, which they can, especially when you've only been doing this a short period of time, if you actually have a food intolerance, the reactions are magnified in that 2 week to several month, you know, 2 week to 6 month range. So if you do have a food sensitivity to those foods, the reactions can be quite dramatic. So, you know that can happen. And know that the best, you know, we've done recovery shows, but know that the best thing you can do after that is sleep, reduce stress, stay hydrated, right? Work on gut health. But those are the best things that you can do to recover if it gets bad. And, but it's a lot easier to get back, sort of back in the game when things went bad and you knew that could happen and you knew you made the choice anyways, right? It's so much easier to bounce back when it's your own choice and you knew that that was a possibility, compared to feeling like you were bullied into it, you know, feeling like you were peer pressured, or, you know, all of the other possible scenarios that could lead to you eating that particular food.
Sounds good to me.
Let's answer some questions.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So our first question is from Patricia. Patricia says, "First of all, I want to say you both really inspire me. I've been diagnosed with my first autoimmune disease, and the paleo diet seems to really help. It's just that I'm still having a hard time being consistent. I have a question for you. What did you use for snacks when you traveled on an airplane? What can you take with you? If you can get back to me with suggestions, I'd really appreciate it. I'm trying so hard to stay on with my diet."
This is a really good question, especially as people are traveling. So I will tell you, Patricia, that there are things that you can buy, and then there are things that you can bring. So I think we should each like give a couple of those there. Mm-hmm. So when I pack in my bags, I usually pack something sweet. I usually pack something salty, and then I always pack like protein. And all of those inevitably end up having some satiating fat involved as well. So something like a Steve's Paleo Kit, if you're not AIP, that has nuts. Do they still do the coconut ones? Actually, those might be.
I can't.
No, because it'd be like paprika on it.
They all have nightshades, yeah. So I don't eat any of them, unfortunately. Yeah. They're really tasty. I remember my pre-AIP days and my love of Steve's Paleo Kits.
So Steve's Paleo Kits, if you don't have a paprika problem, because that's what I I remember when I started reconsuming paprika and being super excited, but those have like fruit and nuts, and some have coconut and meat in them. So it's nearly a meal, and they have no problem going through TSA. They're air packed, you know, what do they call those suction machines? Like, you know,
they're packed. Yeah.
Yeah. So they fit really well in purses and backpacks and all that kind of stuff. I also really love Epic bars and RX bars, as Epic is almost always like a protein and a fat for me. There's not really sweets or fruit or anything in them. They're really savory, and RX bars on the other hand. So that to me is like a lunch or a dinner in between kind of snack. But for breakfast, that's too much for me. Like, I just can't have an Epic bar that early in the morning. So RX bars really work for me. They're made with dates and egg white protein, and they're now using cashews instead of figs. I don't know if you heard about this, Sarah, but
didn't. I always thought the figs was the magic.
I know. I haven't. They sent me an email that said that they want feedback on this new formula, but I really psycho loved the figs, but I'm curious because I like cashews as well. So anyway, so RX bars are one of my favorites. And then for sweets, well, an RX bar is kind of sweet, but I'm really very often tempted into, especially when I'm traveling and I'm not getting very good sleep, to be drawn to something like ice cream or like a low quality chocolate when I'm out and about. So I pack myself, specifically Steve's dried strawberries are like gummy candies to me. They're amazing, and they're just like strawberries and apple juice. And then I also really always have to pack like a really good dark chocolate to avoid other chocolate, because then I'm like, well, I already have this dark chocolate in my bag. I shouldn't eat that. Not shouldn't. I don't like the word shouldn't. It would not be a wise choice for me to buy this other low quality chocolate since I already have chocolate in my bag. So those are the foods that I always have around, and I find that those work really well for the boys as well. They have some particular favorites. They really like plantain chips and some more carb-centric snacks that we pack as well, but I don't tend to consume those if I'm like in between and needing a snack. So I know the cassava strips and the plantain chips are both AIP friendly and kind of crunchy and salty if that's something that you're into. But when I'm out and about and I don't have something or I really want a meal, salads and bunless burgers are what I always stick to. So I can almost always find a salad, and salads are like rarely pre-mixed, even at like quick dining restaurants, they're compiling them. So like if I get a Cobb salad or something, I can tell them no blue cheese, no tomatoes. And then I just get a salad with bacon and chicken and avocado. And, you know, you can ask for olive oil and dressing, or you can pack your own salad dressing in your bag. There's a variety of ways to approach that if you don't want to have, you know, whatever kind of dressing they're serving.
Okay, so that was all, that was like all the things.
All your things.
So, I mean, I think maybe what I'll do is take that question to a strict autoimmune protocol level, and go so far as like, what can you do for international travel where your limitations, you've got some limitations in terms of what you can bring. So I travel between America and Canada fairly frequently because I'm Canadian and I live in America. So that's a thing. So I'm really very well familiar with the customs between those two countries, and it's different in different countries. So there's certain things that I can bring into Canada that you might not be allowed if you were traveling to China, for example. But there are currently two flavors of Epic bars that are entirely autoimmune protocol friendly, the bison bacon cranberry and the beef apple bacon. The beef apple bacon is by far my favorite flavor. And I mean, the bison cranberry is good, but the beef apple bacon is totally the bomb.
I haven't even had that. It's the plain, it's the plain bacon pieces that I really like, but I'm going to have to check out this.
Salt on the plain bacon pieces gets to me. So I feel like for me, it's a snack, but it's not, it's too salty for the protein for a meal. So for me, it's the bars that the beef apple bacon bars are, I mean, I really do eat them for breakfast at least 4 mornings a week. So, they're just, they are my emergency food. I always have 2 bars in my purse. I may or may not buy all the cases every time they're in stock. And so they are autoimmune protocol friendly. They're non-perishable. Therefore, they can cross a border. The other protein, because I always feel like protein is the hardest thing for autoimmune protocol that is really easy to bring across a border, is there's quite a few different grass-fed meat jerkies out there that are seasoned with just salt. So, for example, U.S. Wellness Meats has a couple different options, one that is not technically non-perishable, but one that is good at room temperature for quite a long time. So those are great options. The other thing that I like is things like pouched tuna. I mean, yes, eating plain tuna is not the most enjoyable experience for most people, but it tends to travel really well. You can take that pouch and put it in another bag. TSA has never given me any flack over having canned fish. You know, there's a little bit of liquid in there, but they've never said anything to me. That's no guarantee that they won't say anything to you, but they just seem to ignore it when it's in my suitcase. So there's that. And I find canned fish can be, it's a really good, like, I'm getting to the hotel and now I can finally eat food, right? To me, I always feel really self-conscious eating something like sardines or canned oysters on an airplane, because I feel like now the entire airplane smells like my sardines. And that's maybe not what all 200 people on board wanted to smell. So on an airplane, I'll stick with like Epic Bars, jerky. And then for me, when I travel, I always know where the border is. So I can pack a salad or some like raw veggies, an apple, banana, something like that. And I always know, like, I have to finish that before I cross the border. And so if I'm not finished it, then I have to throw it out and, you know, before I go through customs and immigration. Dried fruit is usually a good one, and allowed across borders. Stacey already mentioned plantain chips and cassava chips, which are autoimmune protocol friendly, and a nice little carbohydrate, kick, which I find can be really, really helpful on those long trips. And sometimes the salt, right, because it gets you drinking a little bit more, can be really good to stop from getting dehydrated on an airplane. And then in airports, I usually pack so much I don't need to buy anything in an airport. If I do, it's usually, you can often get, again, veggie sticks with, you know, the dips in a separate sealed container, so you can just throw out the dip, or a salad, again, where, you know, things are nicely compartmentalized, so you can, you know, things, it hasn't, if it has croutons in it, then I'm not going to touch that. But if it's, you know, in a separate little bag and I can throw that bag out, then I'll typically go for that. Fruit, right? So apples and bananas are super easy to get, and sometimes fresh oranges, super easy to get in airports. And often in business class, they'll have fresh fruit, so bananas or apples. So if you're on like an international flight where they're providing a meal, even if your meal doesn't come with fresh fruit, you can often ask for it and they will. You know, if it's just one person who's asking for a banana, they can go up to business class and get you one of their bananas. They usually have tons. So those are like my go-tos for travel. You know, my kids don't follow, they just are standard paleo. So for them, I have an entirely different collection of things. You know, it's a lot more nut-based. And for them, it's always the trick for them is always finding a protein. I forgot about Powerballs. Have you had Powerballs yet?
I have not had Powerballs.
You need to get yourself some Powerballs.
So there are so many jokes right now, but yes, I'm just going to roll.
Yes, yes, you do. So these are a new product on the market. To me, they feel like a cookie. So they're very much sort of like a macaroon sized. They're coconut based. So if you don't tolerate coconut, that's not going to work, but they are autoimmune protocol friendly. They're made with gelatin and collagen, and they have quite an impressive amount of protein in one little cookie. And they're, again, vacuum sealed, so they're non-perishable. And that's like a sweet treat that's totally portable and would be allowed across the border. And it has a little protein kick. So it's also, you know, it's always good to be able – that's always, to me, the struggle traveling is where am I going to get my safe proteins. So, total plug for Powerballs right there.
The other thing that you didn't mention that I thought you would was the U.S. Wellness Meats pork rinds,
They have a salt only one now. Yeah.
Those are one of my AIP staples, and I always bring a bag or two. They're not super convenient for packing if you're traveling and you have a limited space because they're puffy and they take up space. But like when we go on car road trips and stuff, I always take some for myself, and I have to like swat the boys' hands away from them because I'm like, it's mine.
My brand new 6-year-old, because she turned 6 on Wednesday, so I have to say 6-year-old. That's like one of her favorite things. So she'll see me open it and she'll be like, Mom, can I have one?
Oh yeah, those bags never go stale, because as soon as you open them, everybody's like, I'll have a few, and then they're gone.
Yeah.
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 Perfect. One more question, maybe?
Let's do one more. This is from Justin. And Justin says, hello, I want to follow the autoimmune protocol, but I don't have access to a kitchen because of my current living situation. Is it even possible to follow an AIP diet when you can't put together anything in a kitchen at all? Any advice on prepackaged meals, snacks, etc., that I can easily buy at a grocery store, Target, or Walmart?
All right. You said AIP snacks?
Mm-hmm.
Well, nuts are out for you, my friend. Hard-boiled eggs are out for you. These are hard. Those were really difficult things for me, because I remember starting AIP and stopping it at a 7-Eleven. And the things that I was used to eating on the road at regular stores were no longer an option. And I remember crying in the car and just like freaking out. And what I learned to do was pack things like we just talked about. Fresh fruit is another one, but that didn't have protein. So for me, making sure that I had protein of another source, because the other thing about AIP that Sarah, you and I don't talk about, but was really important for me, was finding out what kind of, cooking fat it was used in, because I have a gallbladder issue as well. And so cooking fats was like really important for me when I went through the healing process.
If it's the wrong fats, it can be very inflammatory. So you can take a great food and make it a bad food by cooking it in the wrong fats.
Right. So technically you could get like, you know, it wouldn't have spices on it, it wouldn't have whatever, but then if they cooked it in a low quality fat, for me, it would affect me digestively. So when I went strict AIP and I had to start, there was not a single restaurant that only cooked in lard, because butter is out and canola oil is out and all that kind of stuff. Like I couldn't find any place. And then I found Elevation Burger that has olive oil. But anyway, it's really about planning ahead. Like I don't have a lot of ideas for you other than what we just mentioned. I do know that like my local Giant has a lot of the foods that we've talked about now, like plantain chips. They have, my local stores, including Target. Target's a really good option because almost everybody has it, and they are going towards a organic approach as well as Costco. So if either of those are an option.
Even Walmart is. Walmart now carries grass-fed beef.
Interesting. Well, I know like for me, Target carries a lot of things that I could only previously find at Whole Foods, like La Croix water or I'm trying to think what else, plantain chips. They carry the high quality soy-free chocolate chips. So there's a lot of things there that I was having to go to Whole Foods for, and a Target is like in biking distance for us. It's really close. So being able to have those options, it's easier than Giant, which for AIP, depending on what store you're at, you know, like Jackson sweet potato coconut oil chips is not going to be something that you can likely find at your local Giant. So, I think that there might be plantain chips at our local Giant, but we also have like a really urban Giant, so I'm not even going to assume that that's there. I don't know. Do you have better ideas?
So, I mean, I guess, so here's two sets of ideas. So I don't know if Justin has access to like a bar fridge. So maybe he has no kitchen, but he has a little bar fridge where you can actually keep.
I actually ask for, I mean, that's a good point. When we book our hotels, we always like look for a hotel that has a mini fridge, specifically that has a microwave / fridge combo.
So with if you've got a mini fridge, then most stores will have a rotisserie chicken with no seasoning as one of the options. So there'll be, you know, a naked rotisserie chicken. Those are pretty easy to find, and that would be a great protein option. And then often in the deli sections, there is You know, you can get pre-made salads without a salad dressing. You can get, you know, sometimes there'll be a salad bar and you can just pick and choose, or you can get vegetable sticks ready to go. Keep a little olive oil and a little, you know, balsamic vinegar. You know, it's basically something like 1-to-1 or a little bit more olive oil to vinegar is there. You've got a salad dressing, or olive oil and lemon juice is really delicious as a salad dressing. Some places, delis will have, you know, that you start to have to worry about read the ingredients and look at the fats, but, you know, maybe they'll have like roasted sweet potatoes or something like that. Often it's in canola oil. So just, you know, ask questions if you don't know. Fresh fruit. And then if a fridge is not an easy thing, and if you're not a person who eats a whole rotisserie chicken in one sitting, because maybe Justin is, then canned seafood is a great option. So canned fish or fish in pouches. It is good to make sure the cans are BPA free. But there's even Walmart or Target will have quite a diversity of canned fish. I mean, there's also things like canned chicken. Do read the ingredients. But those are great options with some, you know, raw veggies and a piece of fruit. And if you can get something like plantain chips or cassava chips, maybe you do an online order for those things. That can, you know, that you've got a, you know, a salad, some raw veggies, you've got your starchy vegetable, you've got some fruit, you've got some protein. You know, it's obviously not ideal, but it's, you know, it's doable. You can get some, trying to think, none of the online vendors actually have like AIP, like liverwurst or pates. They all have pepper in them. If you know pepper's okay for you, then that opens up a whole other range of options. You can get like canned cod livers, which are really good with plantain chips as crackers, and get some liver in that way. Or maybe this is a really good case for Vital Proteins new liver encapsulated liver pills, or Dr. Ron's, who has a variety of different sort of grass-fed organ meats, all, you know, dehydrated and put in pill form. That's a good way to get those extra nutrients. So I think that there's, you know, it gets more boring, right? Because you're not cooking things with, you know, there's flavors that you create when you cook that you don't get in any other way. But there is still, I think, a very large diversity of, you know, pretty much every vegetable that is on the autoimmune protocol, you can eat raw. I can't think of any examples. Cassava, you wouldn't want to eat raw. But I can think of, like, that's it. That's all I got. Bamboo. Don't eat bamboo raw. There's very few vegetables that you wouldn't want to eat raw that you actually need to prepare in order to make them safe to eat. And so, you know, all those vegetables you can eat raw. The fiber from raw vegetables is really, really good for us. So, you know, don't feel bad that you're eating raw vegetables. And then fruit's great. And, you know, seafood is, I mean, I actually sometimes think that a pescatarian approach to the autoimmune protocol may even be superior. So, especially if it includes a variety of seafood and lots of shellfish. So there's that. You could also look at things like sea snacks. So you're getting some seaweed. They're made with olive oil. Trying to think of some other good, like, eat right out of the package. Kelp noodles you can eat right out of the package. You just rinse them. All the other things we just mentioned, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff that you're saying, I totally agree with, but I just know that they're not, like, at my regular stores, you know, like a...
So, I mean, Whole Foods has kelp noodles. I've seen sea snacks in a lot of different places around here. So, you know, I definitely feel like, you know, you can do simple salad veggies, veggie sticks, some fruit, and either rotisserie chicken or canned seafood really easily from anywhere. And then I feel like, you know, for the variety, you know, an order from Amazon or from One Stop Paleo Shop or from Barefoot Provisions, you know, an order of some of the extra fun snacks can add to quality of life in that type of limited cooking situation.
Yeah, that's definitely if you have the option. Like if you don't have a store near you, but I would definitely recommend checking out Target and Costco. We have a really comprehensive Costco shopping list that Monica can put the link in the show notes for. But otherwise, like we get a lot of stuff delivered from Amazon and One Stop Paleo Shop that like magically arrive at our door and we don't have to leave the house and it's exactly what we want and, you know, top quality ingredients. So if you're not finding some of the stuff that we're talking about, you can certainly find them online and even like Amazon Subscribe and Save. Even if you can find them locally, we get a lot of things just because we have Amazon Prime membership. It is delivered free in 2 days. And then the Subscribe and Save option is like up to 15% off of whatever the low Amazon price is to begin with. So like plantain chips, and the boys get avocado oil potato chips that they pack in their lunches, and just, you know, a ton of stuff through Subscribe and Save.
For sure. Yeah. I definitely use Subscribe and Save. And in Atlanta, we have same day delivery now.
Yeah, some of our items are same day, but not all.
Yeah,
of them.
I mean it's clearly not all, but that has
I've heard really
saved me so much time.
I've heard really good things about the Amazon fresh food delivery service that's starting up. I have a friend in Texas that has access to it in Dallas that is like raving about how awesome and affordable and high quality it is.
It's really high, like they're doing like organic produce
Yep. But I mean, if that's what you order, yes. Yeah. So if and when it comes to our area, I don't know. I've never been one to like get fresh produce and stuff delivered.
I mean, my local Whole Foods does delivery and I've never ever used it.
We have local grocery stores that do it as well. But I'm a sucker for Amazon, man. It's nice to be able to buy so much in one place.
Amazon's my friend. My neighbor's comment about how often I get boxes delivered.
Oh, your
neighbor's?
It's not the delivery guy that knows you by name?
Oh, the delivery guy's known me by name for years. That's old hat.
Yep.
No, it's the neighbors that are like, what do you buy? I'm like, everything.
Sometimes for you and I, it's not even what we're buying. Sometimes it's just like, oh, someone sent me this thing. Okay.
Yeah, that's true. That is a whole other level though.
Yeah.
But, no, I find that I can get specifically what I want for cheaper with less time investment online. And so I do a lot of online shopping, a really embarrassingly large amount, actually. I might have a problem. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Well, we don't want people to have problems, but hopefully we've helped you come up with some solutions for ideas on, even if you're not a newbie, I know that these are questions that we get asked all the time. So hopefully it's helpful for you. Hopefully you're having a wonderful kickoff to your holiday season whenever you might be listening to this.
Should we try it again? Do you want to try it again?
What are we trying?
Happy Thanksgiving on three.
Oh, gosh.
Ready? We got to end the show.
It's going to be so terrible. All right.
It cannot be worse than the first attempt. Okay. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
One, two, three.
Happy Thanksgiving!
It was better.
Okay. Thank you for listening, everyone. Give those close to you a big hug and a kiss, and make sure that you are working on those lifestyle factors for de-stressing. The holiday periods are incredibly stressful for a lot of people. They are the height of the American health epidemic in terms of heart attacks and stressful causing diseases. So make sure that you're taking time to think and appreciate what they're really about and don't get caught up in anything that might be stressful and the opposite of the intention of the holidays.
Hear, hear. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll be back next week.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
Hi.
So for some weird reason, Skype was not like automatically running on my computer when you called. And
it could not predict your need for the podcast? It doesn't know?
So I thought that it was just on all the time and it was like impossible to turn off. But lo, apparently.
It really is a government monitoring tool that they just have on all the time. You're right. Your Canadian while has... You've got us.
I've noticed the little click clicks on my phone call, and yeah, pretty sure I'm under close supervision.
Yeah, you're a troublesome one.
Yes, I'm pretty sure I do all the bad things, right?
And that's, definitely. And
we talked about it last week. I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure we hit. Sarah does all the... Yeah, wasn't that it? No, it wasn't at all. Nobody needs to be working Thursday night instead of drinking.
You make it seem like we're all alcoholics.